This is where normal comes to die. Mediocrity meets its final demise, and the status quo is unabashedly dismantled. Welcome to Reinvention Radio. Now, here's your host, Steve Ulscher.
All right, everybody. So welcome to a very special edition here, a live edition on Blab of Reinvention Radio. And this is going to be fun because we've got the founder of BNI, Mr. Ivan Meisner himself with us. And if you are not familiar with BNI, then I got to kind of wonder why. like, where have you been? What have you been doing? Because if you've been doing anything in the business world at all, then you're familiar with BNI. And I will let Ivan tell us the genesis story and sort of where all that came from. But if you've joined us on Blab before, this is your first Blab, welcome. But I will tell you that one of the nice things about this platform is it's very interactive. You're with us live, which means if you have a question, we'd love to answer them as we go through the interview here. So feel free to do the slash capital Q, which will put a question on the left side of the screen for us, or you can just simply do that in the send a message in the chat role that you see there underneath all of the names in the scrolling as well. So, okay. So Ivan, first and foremost, man, how long ago did you kind of have this idea? Because obviously BNI has been around for, you know, a good number of years already, but how long before you actually started it did you have the idea for creating some sort of business networking type organization?
I'm the kind of guy that when I have an idea, I run with it. I literally came up with the notion 31 years ago next week.
Wow.
Awesome. And I started BNI 31 years ago, 4 weeks from now. So it was started. I started in January 8th, 1985. So it took me all of about 3 weeks to go from idea to implementation.
Wow. Awesome. And, you know, one of the things that people who have a business idea kind of struggle with is going from idea to implementation, but then to actual scale.
Yeah.
Right. And so scale is a challenge for a lot of people. There's a million great ideas out there. I mean, before, you know, you came on, Hector and I were talking in the chat role there, he's got an idea for an interactive business card kind of thing. You know, so there's there's billions of ideas and many of them never gain any sort of traction. How did it start for BNI? In other words, you had this idea. You then basically said, I want to bring this to fruition somehow.
Yeah.
Take us through that story of growth, of scale.
Sure. Well, first of all, for those people who don't know what BNI is, we're a referral organization. We allow one person per profession to join a chapter. So there's one lawyer, one banker, one chiropractor. We get together every week. We pass each other referrals. We presently have 7,200 groups in 65 countries all around the world. So we literally have 7,200 meetings every week all around the world.
Wow.
Last year, the organization passed 8.6 million referrals. We generated 6.6 billion. That's a billion with a B, $6.6 billion worth of business for our members all around the world. Now, just so you know, Steve, $6.6 billion is the same as the gross domestic product for the country of Liechtenstein.
Wow, that's insane.
I know, but still, how cool is that, that we could generate as much business as a small nation in the world?
Right. Oh man, that's amazing. And I'm gonna ask Rich. Can you do me a quick favor, man? Can you drop just so we can put Ivan top right, and then come back on? I'm just gonna have Rich do that. Thanks. Perfect. All right. Awesome. So
the question was, you know, what led to it? I needed referrals for my consulting practice. I was a business consultant, and I put together some friends who I knew, I trusted. They knew and trusted me. We agreed to refer each other, and we got together every week. We started passing referrals to each other. Someone came who couldn't join because we had her profession represented. She asked if I would help her open up her own group. I actually said no at first because I told her I'm a business consultant. I don't run a network. And she said, well, this is kind of consulting. I said, okay. We opened it up. The first meeting, we had a bunch of people come who couldn't join. Two of them asked if they could help me, if I would help them set up another group. And I said, no, this isn't what I do. I'm a business consultant. And they talked me into it, and we did. And after a year, we ended up with 20 groups.
Wow. All in sort of a local area?
Yeah, all local, very local. I was in Southern California at the time. And it was at that point, it was actually right around this time, 31 years ago, that I started, 30 years ago, because I'd been doing it now for 1 year, had 20 groups. And again, between Christmas and New Year's, I sat down and I thought, you know, what just happened? You know, I opened 20 groups. I wasn't even trying. There are times in life you have to push for marketing. And there are other times when the marketing just pulls you through. I was pulled through. And I realized that this was a much bigger potential organization than I had intended at first. And it was at that point that we sat down and tried to create an organization of scale.
Mm-hmm. So, interestingly enough, I mean, as a business consultant, that's kind of, I'm sure, what you were doing was helping people build businesses, right? And so here you were with this opportunity kind of just like screaming at you. I mean, it's just like glaring, you know, I mean, like you get slapped over the head with it.
Exactly.
And, right? And so at what point did you decide, I mean, were you an entrepreneur before this in any capacity?
Yeah, absolutely. I'd owned some other businesses, and I would own my own consulting business. So it was my own consulting company.
Yeah.
And I'd owned a few other businesses. A lot of people don't know this. I owned a trucking company, which is really funny because I don't know how to drive a truck. but I actually owned a trucking company and owned it at the same time that I owned the consulting company. So, yeah, I ran had a couple of businesses, and I certainly didn't plan on starting this as a business. But we're now, you know, 65 countries. There were two or three lessons, probably more than that, but there were a number of lessons I learned that I wasn't taught in school. You know, I have 10 years of college, three degrees. They never taught me this stuff in graduate school.
Yeah.
The first is ignorance on fire is better than knowledge on ice.
Mm.
And what that means is you want to pick people who are on fire. They may not know how to do certain things, but if they're willing to learn, you want people that are on fire. It's better than somebody who thinks they know everything, but they're not on fire. Think about an employee. If you're ever hiring an employee, when I'm looking for an employee, I want an employee who will jump in and you know, they're on fire. They're excited. They're a sponge. Rather than somebody who's kind of laid back. They know, you know, they know how to do it, but they're not really immersed in it.
Yep. So
I was on fire. Steve, I was totally on fire. I didn't know how to network. Nobody ever taught me how to network. We don't teach this in colleges and universities anywhere in the world. I was figuring it out as I went. But I was on fire. And the people who I brought into BNI were on fire. That's the first lesson. The second lesson that I think is really important is you got to do six things 1,000 times, not 1,000 things six times. What people tend to do is they try something out. They do it, you know, a half a dozen times. They get tired of doing it. It hasn't worked yet. So they go to the next bright, shiny object that's out there.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of taking a concept that you know has worked for others and doing it over and over and over again, six things 1,000 times.
Nice. Nice. And a third thing?
Well, you know, for me, one of the really important things was to write everything down, to create systems and processes. So, and I'll give credit where credit is due. I had just read a book by Michael Gerber called The E-Myth, The Entrepreneurial Myth.
Yeah.
And The E-Myth, it's a great book. And I've gotten to know Michael in the last 4 or 5 years, an amazing guy. I didn't know him at the time. And in his book, he said something that I really took to heart. He said, write everything down as though you were going to franchise your business. Even if you never plan on franchising your business. And I remember thinking, I'm never going to franchise BNI, but that's good advice anyway. And I wrote everything down. I mean, we created, made hundreds and hundreds of pages of manuals. And guess what? When it came time to really scale. I thought, maybe this franchising is not bad. And I had the manuals.
Mm-hmm.
I started the franchise. So we are a franchise organization. We operate as a franchise all around the world. And it came from Michael's idea in the book that you know.
So let's talk about that for a second, because when you have an idea and people are attracted to it, in this case, it's an intangible, right? I mean, it's not a physical product. You know, it's not, you're not just going and you're just selling, you know, a remote or, yeah, I mean, it's an intangible product when you come right down to it. How did you structure pricing and how did you move then to monetization? Because that's a big leap between people just saying, you know, Ivan, this is a great idea, let's do something with it. And then you're saying, and typically those are friends, right? I mean, typically those are people that you know who are sort of those early adopters, right? Because they're hanging around you. They, like you said, man, ignorance on fire is better than brilliance on ice, right? So it's like they're around you and, you know, they're like, man, I mean, that's a great idea. How did you then separate it so that you said, look, this is something that I am actually going to move forward with as a business. If you want to stay on, you're going to have to either pay or become a partner, have some skin in the game or whatever it might be. And then the whole monetization structure, how are you thinking about those pieces?
Okay, so I charged dues from the very beginning, but I didn't think of this as a multi-group business. You know, I charged dues just because there are expenses in running any organization. But I'll tell you what I did really wrong. Totally did wrong. It answers your question. I set up the dues so that a large percentage of the money stayed with the individual chapter for them to do their marketing. Sounded like a good idea, right? But I mean, think about it. If you have a budget and you're part of a networking group, what's the easiest thing to do with the marketing money? Throw a mixer.
Okay, sure.
Well, so what they ended up doing were really bitching parties. Amazing parties, crazy expensive parties, and sometimes no visitors would come, but they had a great party. And you know, I remember one week going to one of these mixers, and they had no visitors, and about three quarters of their members showed up. And I remember thinking, I'm eating great hors d'oeuvres, but I'm eating the marketing money for this operation. this is it. And then I went to another group, and the president was an attorney, and he said, and I said, I looked at his marketing fund, and I said, you got a lot of money in here. You're not doing anything with it. He said, Ivan, I'm a lawyer. I don't know how to market this. You're the founder of BNI. You should be doing it. You should have this money, and you should be doing it yourself, because I don't know how to market it. I thought, wow, that's a good point. Mm-hmm. So I had, at that point, about 20 groups, and we needed to centralize the marketing. So here's what I did. Because if you're worried, if you're starting a business and you're worried about making mistakes, don't worry. You will make mistakes. The key in scaling is determining when you've made a mistake and what you're going to do to fix it. And here, in order to fix it, I needed to engage hundreds of people to agree to change the marketing program where it was handled locally to being centralized.
Mm.
And what I did was I put together a task force representing all 20 groups. We got together. I then took a mortgage out of my house and I developed marketing material. Just a lot of stuff, and printed them. I mean, it was thousands, and this is 86 now. Doing graphic design work and printing was a lot more expensive than it is today.
Sure.
Printed up all this material, got the task force together, showed them what we could do if we centralized. They said, great idea. Let's change this so that all the marketing money then goes centralized. And we'll go tell the chapters so you don't have to go do it, because they'll accept it from us more than they would accept it from you.
Interesting.
It was brilliant, and it ended up becoming my International Board of Advisors, which is a group that now exists for 30 years. So the lesson here is you're going to make mistakes if you want to scale. Figure out the mistake as soon as possible. Get a strategy to change and fix that mistake. And the more you can engage your customers or your employees into the resolution, the the more likely you are to get through that crisis and move on in the growth of your business. Make sense?
Yeah. Yeah, no, 100%. Do me a favor and just pop your camera up just a little bit more. There, yay, now we can see your smiling face again. Okay, very cool. So it's kind of an ownership. I mean, it's the dynamic of sort of forcing someone to accept what's, you know, you're giving them versus having them create it. And obviously people are more likely to embrace what they create, right? So was that kind of your mentality with that side of the equation? Was if they help you to create it, then they're more likely to embrace and implement it?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, that task force, as I said, ended up becoming the International Board of Advisors, which is made up of members. And we realized very quickly that that worked so well, we actually had to apply every policy. So every single member policy that exists in BNI was either created by the Board of Advisors or approved by the Board of Advisors, which is exactly to your point. The members created the policies that apply to the members. So that so that when somebody complains, for example, we have an attendance policy. We require that people show up. I mean, I tell people, how many of you have ever gotten a haircut over the phone? You know, it's not easy to do. You've got to be there. Well, one of the things we learned early on is if you want referrals, you got to show up. You have to be present. So the attendance is required. Now, one of the strengths of a network is that most of the members are friends. One of the weaknesses of a network is that most of the members are friends. Friends don't like to hold friends accountable. So accountability is key, which means you need to have rules. And the best way to deal with those are to have the members design the rules. So then you can say to another member, I didn't create that rule. You did. Mm-hmm. I didn't do it. Well, you through the members, all the policies were created by the members. It's a very powerful discussion when people understand that the members created all the policies. So if you can engage your clients and certainly your employees, in the decision-making of your organization, it really helps in the long run, I believe.
Yeah, for sure. And what is the model then now? So it's a franchise model. So can you explain the difference between, for those who don't understand, what's the difference between licensing and franchising? And when you looked at your options in terms of what you could do with this, I mean, obviously this thing was, I mean, it was starting to blow up and almost like uncontrollably grow, right? Yeah. How did you look at your options and decide that franchising was the best way, you know, to move forward?
Yeah, no. So I'll answer the question. A lawyer can answer the question better than I can, but I'll give you my layman's response. There are really several things that determine the difference between a license and a franchise. And I did try it out as a license first just to see if the concept would work. But in the long run, the difference is really control and royalties. There's probably more differences. Control and royalties are two key points. The more control you exercise, the more likely you are a franchise. Whereas a license says, I'm gonna license this CD content to you. You use it however you want. You can only use it within this territory. You pay me this fee, and you use it as you see fit. That's a license. A franchise is, here's the manual. You've got to follow it exactly, and I'm going to come in and check on you every now and then to make sure you're following it exactly. And you have to use this software, and you have to use, and here's the graphic design work you have to. There's a lot more control on a franchise. Go to any McDonald's. One McDonald's after another looks consistently the same. Mm-hmm. Subway, consistently the same. Almost any franchise company, a good one, is very consistent in their application. That's a lot of control. Trust me. It takes a lot of control to make sure that there's that consistency. The other thing is royalty. If you charge a royalty of any kind, you're a franchise. I don't care what you call yourself, you're a franchise. And the states that you are in, many of them are registration states, and now many countries have franchise requirements. you could call it anything you want, but if you're charging a royalty, you're going to be a, you're going to be considered a franchise by the government. So those two things are really important.
And how do you maintain quality control, man? Because, I mean, 7,200 chapters, I mean, Jesus, at some point there, you got to just throw your hands up and go, okay, it's going to be what it's going to be. Or you've got to have, as you said, I mean, some serious systems in place, because 7,200 chapters, how do you address the quality control?
Yeah, quality control is an issue. I mean, take something as simple as our logo, the BNI logo. Wow, it was at one point in the organization, it was so, you could go to all these different websites and our logo was so different. I didn't know if it was my organization or if it was, I mean, there are other, there's a bank out there that uses the name BNI. There's a building association that uses the name BNI. Mm-hmm. And they don't infringe on our trademark because they're so different than businesses. And so I didn't know which BNI they were. And it became obvious then that we had to tighten the screws on something as simple as our brand. So you have to have people in office that are QC people, quality control people that, you know, are the brand police, basically. Go out and make sure that everything is compliant, training compliance. You want to make sure. See, here's the thing with training. If you're trying to scale your business, you have to remember, education is a leaky bucket process. The leaky bucket. If you train me how to do something, some of the information leaks out. Okay? And then I train someone else, more information leaks out. Mm-hmm. If they train someone else, even more information leaks out. And after three generations or so of training, what you have is a half a bucket of information.
It's like that game of Operator as a kid, right?
Exactly right. So when someone looks at it and it's missing a lot of stuff, they go, well, something's missing. So what do? They start putting in their own stuff. Mm-hmm. And that's going to be different than the original concept. And so you end up with something completely different. So you have to control the educational process as much as possible. Manuals help. Today with technology, video helps. Online training helps. And you have to reduce the leaky bucket concept as much as possible. And you have to put people in place who will help manage the systems and control.
Okay. No, it totally makes sense. I've got a couple questions I want to make sure we get in here. But Bruno has a really good question. And Bruno was asking, basically, how can you trust someone with a referral if you don't really know that person? Maybe it's someone who is new to the chapter.
Bruno, that is a great question, and I agree with you completely. When you give a referral, you give a little bit of your reputation away. When you give a good referral, it enhances your reputation, but if you give a bad referral, it hurts your reputation. And so one of the things that we tell members, and that I teach anyone, is that networking is more about farming than it is about hunting, that it's about cultivating relationships with other business professionals. All of that means you should not give referrals until you know and trust the person. And so it takes time to get referrals. I see people, they come into a network, whether it's BNI or some other group, and they're expecting this immediate return on their time. They're an immediate set of referrals. And it doesn't work that way. People are not going to refer you until they know and trust you. Mm-hmm. And when they trust you, that's when they're going to give you referrals. And this is where networking goes completely off the rails, because people use networking as a face-to-face cold calling opportunity. Hi, Steve, my name's Ivan. Let's do business. And they jump right into I wrote a book called Business Networking and Sex, Not What You Think, between men and women and how they network. And in there, we call that premature solicitation. You don't want to say fast three times. It'll get you in trouble. But that's, you know, when you're asking for business before there's any relationship. So, Bruno, the answer to the question is you have to build the relationship before you have the trust and can give referrals. And once you've done that, then it just increases and increases and increases over time.
Yeah, no, it's a really good question. And again, thanks for joining us live here. And if you have any questions, drop it in the chat roll, or you can hit the /Q. And then we'll see that on the answer questions side of the equation here. So, Ivan, one of the questions that I have for you is, you know, my family was actually in the franchise business. My family franchised liquor stores in started out in the Chicago area and then ended up we worked in about 12 states by the time we were all said and done. But I can tell you that one of the things that we found to be most lucrative from a revenue stream perspective is the whole concept around group buying, right? You've got 7,200 chapters. How many people on average are in a chapter?
The statistical mean worldwide is 26. We have a total of 190,000 members worldwide.
It's a lot of buying power. It's a huge amount of buying power. Have you ever, and maybe you do this and I'm just unfamiliar with it, but have you ever worked on the top level with a supplier to either really bring the cost down or bring in sponsors who pay to reach that community? I mean, that's an incredibly deep-pocketed community. And obviously, when you get folks who are spending on a consistent basis, that money can go in a lot of different directions.
Right. We have thought this through considerably. We've tested it. Here's the challenge. Let's say, you know, pick a service, banking. Let's say credit card processing or medical insurance. I mean, medical insurance, well, that was a big one up until, you know, maybe the last year or so, difficult to get. So let's go with banking. Wouldn't it be good to be able to provide banking services at some kind of discounted rate or easy to get or low rates for merchant services? Wouldn't you agree that that would be good for a lot of business people?
Of course.
Here's the problem.
You set me up for that one, man.
Yeah, well, look, I got set up for it. It happened to me. Once you pick a bank, well, you know, let's say it's Citibank that you create this relationship with. Once you take that to all the chapters, 7,200 chapters, almost every chapter has a bank. And they're probably not all Citibank.
Yeah.
So now when you go to a local chapter and you say to the Wells Fargo person in the chapter, we have a relationship with Citibank and we're recommending all your members do business with them. They go wild.
Yeah.
They go wild. They hang, you know, they create an effigy of me in the chapter and then they hang it in the highest beam.
Yeah.
So doing that group buying is a great concept, but when you're in a referral organization, you then compete with your own members. And that's where it falls apart, unfortunately, in our context.
Yeah. You know, and from a professional services standpoint, I can see that, right? Because BNI was really built on the premise of connecting professional service type folk, exactly. Right? I'm thinking more physical product, you know, like even, yeah, I mean, like, you name it, like it could be an airline, right? In terms of having a special something with, you know, United as the and frankly, wouldn't it make sense for United to be the official airline of BNI or something of that nature, or Ford to be the official car company? You know what I'm saying?
And, you know, there are sponsorships that that people can do for conferences and whatnot. But here's the problem, even in that. Do you know how many car salesmen we have in BNI? Thousands. And they're not all Ford dealers.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. So they get mad.
Yeah.
It's a great concept, but you know, you want to have integrity in what you provide in terms of services as a company. And when we're talking about building relationships and doing business with people you know and trust, and then we come in and say, you don't know this company, you don't necessarily haven't built trust with this company, and we know you have somebody in your group that already does this, but use ours instead. There's no integrity in that. And that's why it hasn't, we've not done it a lot.
Yeah.
There's been a few relationships that we've been able to do it with, but they're pretty few.
Yeah. It's the double-edged sword of being in this sort of industry. But ultimately it goes back to the concept. And do you take credit for coining this phrase? Where did the whole givers gain idea come from? Is something out of the mind of Ivan Meisner? Did someone bring that to you? Where did that come from?
It was a phrase that I heard years ago in a seminar, and they said, you know, you you should incorporate this into your business. And by golly, I did. And it was almost at the very beginning of BNI. And I've trademarked that puppy for networking organizations.
And so just for those who are unfamiliar with Giver's Gain, what is the premise behind that very simple statement?
So Giver's Gain is it's part of social capital theory, and it's part of the concept of the law of reciprocity. And the law of reciprocity basically says really what goes around comes around. If you help people and support people, they're going to help you and support you as well. And that's what Giver's Gain is all about. Giver's Gain, the concept is if I help you and build a relationship with you and I support you, that you're going to do the same for me. Now, this is really important in understanding the social capital. Social capital a lot is much like financial capital. If you opened up a checking account and you didn't put any money in it, but you wrote a check out, let's say you put $100 in, but you wrote a check out for $1,000, the bank wouldn't be happy with that. You've tried to withdraw more than you've put in. Mm-hmm. We do that all the time in networking. We meet people. It's that face-to-face cold calling. Hi, my name's Ivan. Let's do business. And you try to get a withdrawal from somebody before you invest in them. So Giver's Gain is about investing. Let me help you in some way. Let me build a relationship with you. And then by investing in you and our relationship, you'll be willing to invest in me and my relationship. Mm-hmm. Very powerful concept that works very effectively.
Mm-hmm. And how quickly do people, well, if I wanted to join as a member, and I know you're transitioning out of BNI from an active day-to-day, and we'll get to that in 2 seconds, but
yeah, I think that was still involved in BNI, but from the day-to-day management, yeah, I'm stepping back.
Yeah, yeah. If I wanted to join one of the organizations, or if I wanted to start my own franchise, how does that work in terms of pricing as a member, or if I wanted to own my own franchise?
Yeah, you know, to own your own franchise, you would want to, there's an offering circular. You have to see a lot of information. We can't just say, go here and buy one. There is a website, BNI, I think it's BNIfranchise.com. We don't actually promote the sale of franchises that much. It's almost all word of mouth. So we don't do ads for our franchises. But I think BNIfranchise.com has got a lot of information.
Gotcha. As an individual member to join, how is that structured?
So BNI.com, you can find out information about the chapters all over the world. The price varies from country to country, but it's basically the same as a membership in a chamber of commerce. It's not a lot. It's a few hundred dollars. So yeah. It's not a lot of money. You would want to go visit a chapter and make sure it's a good fit. You got to make sure that the people there you're comfortable with and that they're comfortable with you and that your classification is open. But BNI.com, we can get information.
Gotcha. Bruno's got another great question, which is, what is the most common mistake that most people new to BNI make when starting and how can they avoid it?
Well, I think the most common mistake, there's probably a couple. One of them I've already talked about, and that is they're expecting referrals immediately. There's a concept that I developed called the time confidence curve, and we actually have a little graph that shows, it takes a certain amount of time before people have confidence. It's an XY axis. It takes a certain amount of time before people have confidence in your ability to provide a quality product or service. Mm. So you have to hit that time confidence curve point before you're going to be getting any referrals. And the time confidence curve varies by profession. So a florist, the time confidence curve is pretty quick. A printer, it's a little longer. A real estate agent, longer. A financial planner who's investing in your retirement is the longest. So you have to understand what kind of profession you're in as to how long it will take, but you've got to give it time. That's the first thing. The second thing is you've got to learn how to educate people how to refer you. In BNI, each week you have a chance to stand and give generally about a 1 minute commercial about who you are and what business you're in. The biggest mistake that people make is they try and say everything They do. I'm a full service, whatever.
Yeah.
Instead, you, specific is terrific when you're introducing yourself. The more you can hone in and be laser specific about one product or one service, you want to try, if you're trying to educate a referral team, you're not trying to close a sale. You want to train a sales team. So your presentations each week should be about, should be educational, not salesy. Those are the two biggest mistakes.
Yeah, I love that. Specific is terrific. That's a that's a good one. All right, so talk to us about what's next for you. I mean, obviously you're still going to be involved, but I know you've been trying to, yes, you're still be involved. I got that. But you're going to try to train
a lot of people in B&I that think I'm retiring, and I'm absolutely not retiring.
Yeah, you just want to do, you were saying you want to get involved in more speaking gigs, you want to do more media. So what, like,
more
if or this, right? So what's the giver's gain for you? What can we give to you moving forward?
Thank you. I appreciate you asking that. So, you know, I think an entrepreneur is either working in their flame or working in their wax.
Mm.
When they're working in their flame, they're on fire. They're excited. They love what they're doing. They're passionate about it. When they're working in their wax, it just sucks them dry. You know, they're just, it just takes all their energy out.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was the CEO and chairman for decades. I was pretty good at it. I loved it. Did it for a long time. Did it long enough that, you know, it became my wax. If I had to talk to another lawyer, I think I'd do ritual seppuku. I'm just done. So my flame has evolved over the years to writing, to doing these kinds of things, interviews, to speaking, doing presentations. That's become my flame. And so I brought in a partner into B&I who, you know, it's his flame is running the company and dealing with all the lawyers and the accounting and the craziness of it. And God bless him. I love him for that. And that's what he's doing. So this has given me an opportunity to do the things that I love. And I think the founder of a company is uniquely positioned to be the spokesperson of the company.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody can ever be quite the same spokesperson, assuming that they like doing it. And so that's really my focus for the next decade is I'd like to continue to do these kinds of things and to write books.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
For me are speaking engagements and interviews like this.
All right. There we go. Speaking engagements and interviews. Sweet. So let's drop out of the business conversation for a second here. And let's go to the more human, the more personal side of Ivan, right? I mean, take us back through some of the early days. What did you think you wanted to do? When, I mean, you went to college, what did you, like, when you were a kid, man, what was like, because I know as a kid, you weren't like, oh, I want to start a networking organization, right? I mean, like, what, so what was going on back in the day?
I wanted to be a lawyer.
Really?
Yeah. I just said, if I
had the same people you couldn't stand to work with now.
That's right. And it's really funny because, you know, when I was, I was probably 21. I just graduated from college. I applied to law school and was accepted. And I had wanted to be a lawyer for many years, you know, since I was certainly in junior high. Mm. And I don't know what it was. I have no idea. But I just sat back and I thought, I just got accepted. It was a 3-year thing. Do I really want to do this? And I can't, to this day, I can't tell you why, but I came to the conclusion that probably it was, you know, I thought it was something interesting when I was a child, but I'm now a young adult, and I don't think this is what I want to do. And I did an about turn and went to graduate school instead of law school. And let me tell you, I'm really glad I did it.
Right. And it's funny how it all.
Really glad I did it. There's some, you know, some people, they love the law and God bless them. That's good for them. But I'm really glad I did. So let me tell you one other thing about this, because this is really important. I taught for almost 19 years at a state university in California. And these kids would come up to me and they'd say, Dr. Meisner, what business should I get into? And I'd say, well, what are you passionate about? What do you love to do? And I remember this happened so many times. they'd say, no, that's not my question. My question is, what's the latest, greatest business? What's the business that I should be looking for that I should really launch in? I said, great, okay, what do you love to do? And I actually had one guy say to me once, no, you're not listening to me. Mm-hmm. I said to him, no, you're not listening to me. What do you love to do? And he's like, why is that relevant? I said, I'll tell you why it's relevant. Because if you want to be successful at something, you got to love it, at least like it. Because if you're not passionate about it, if it's not something you really want to do, you'll never achieve sustained success in it, because it'll be your wax instead of your flame. And so I think it's so important to follow your flame and hire people to do that crap you don't want to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, it's funny. I believe that pursuing your passion is actually career suicide, because it's like, you know, to me, and maybe you're not familiar with the work that I do around the whole concept of answering the core question of what is your what, right? I mean, what is that one thing that you're really naturally wired to excel at? In my way of thinking, you know, your what has really chosen you. Yeah. It's not that which you have chosen. And people can be passionate as hell about, you know, growing tomatoes in their backyard, but it doesn't mean that they're going to open up a tomato factory. You know, where you get to to that level. And so there's kind of that fine line where I think we've kind of slapped people in the face and said, hey, if you do what you love, the money will follow. And a lot of people woke up with cupcake stores and a Ford lease sign on the side, right?
Well, yeah, no, you listen, I couldn't disagree with you. And you'd better, though, find something that you do like that you can make money at. I'm not suggesting that everything you're passionate about, you can make money at. I'm passionate about chess. I'll never be a grandmaster. I'm passionate about astronomy. I'll never be an astronomer.
By the way, that's so funny. The audio cut out for like 1 second. I thought what you said was I'm passionate about checks. Like, you know, getting checks from people. I was like, yeah, that's a great thing to be passionate about.
Well, I don't mind that either. But I'm passionate about the game of chess.
Yeah.
But I'll never be a grandmaster at it. So, you know, I'm not suggesting that you follow anything you're passionate about. I'm just suggesting that if you pick a business and you're not passionate about that business,
yeah,
you will almost certainly fail. So whatever business, whatever opportunity, look, I wasn't passionate about networking, not really at first. I didn't know anything about it.
Sure.
But the more I learned about it, the more I was engaged in it, the more excited I became. Mm-hmm. And I was passionate about building relationships with people. And the networking was an outgrowth of that. I knew nothing about it. But it was a business that I grew excited about and pursued.
Gotcha. So are you a car guy? Are you an adventure travel guy? Go back on the personal front just for a second. What's Dr. Ivan Meisner doing when you're not building a 7,200 outlet organization?
You know, my people ask me all the time, where's your favorite place in the world? And my favorite place is home. I travel so much.
Yeah,
I love just to be home. I just bought a new place in Austin on the lake, and I hope to be able to actually travel a little bit less.
Yeah,
and, spend a little more time, writing and maybe go out on the lake every now and then.
Nice.
So I'm not a crazy, I'm not a high adventure kind of guy. I travel a lot. I travel for a living. Last year I was on the road 9 months out of the year.
So, wow.
This year is 6 months. So my goal next year is to be 4 months.
Yeah. You married?
Oh, yeah. I'm married 26 years.
Wow.
Elizabeth was a member of BNI. I met her in BNI.
Wow.
It was the best referral I ever got.
Yeah.
And 26 years this year.
Wow. That's awesome. And is she ready for the new Dr. Ivan Meisner? Is she okay with it's a big difference between having hubby on the road for 9 months out of the year and now having you home, all the time.
She is. She's excited to be, to actually have a husband who's not gone all the time.
Right.
We moved into this place in Austin and there's boxes everywhere and we're, kind of unpacking. But the one requirement was I needed to have a separate office. So she could have a little space of her own.
Yeah, yeah, for sure, man. All right, so last question that I have, and folks, if you have any other questions, now's the time to to type them in the box there. Otherwise, we're going to let Dr. Meisner go on his way. But as you look back, I mean, obviously, you've had a lot of success on the business front. I know there were struggles, there was ups and downs, just like every entrepreneurial journey. But is there one thing that as you look back on, well, even your personal side of the equation or your business side, is there one thing that you really look back on and you go, damn, that was a missed opportunity?
You know, I try not to look at things that way. If you ever watched Mythbusters?
Yeah, sure.
I love Mythbusters. And there's a phrase they use in Mythbusters that, that I really like. He says, I reject your reality and I substitute my own. I try not to think about roads not taken because it comes back to, you know, if you're worried about making mistakes in life or in business, don't worry about it because you will. Mm-hmm. You're going to make mistakes. So to me, it's not a matter of, you know, the path not taken. It's really a matter of creating, for me, it's a matter of creating a life. Well, I talk a lot about balance when I'm talking to business people. And it's related to balance. So would you like the secret to balance in business? Would you like to hear the secret to balance?
Yeah, of course.
Okay, here it is. Ready? Forget about balance. You'll never have it. People always freak out when I say that. But there is something you can have. And so this is what I tend to focus on. You may not be able to have balance, where, like Lady Justice, where everything is balanced. You're spending exactly this much time in business and this much time in personal life and spiritual life. You can have, however, harmony.
Mm.
And it's not semantics. It really is, I think, an important concept that things don't have to be in balance, but they need to be in harmony. So I travel a lot, but let me tell you something. When I'm home, I am home. And so one of the phrases that I use to create a life in harmony is be here now. Wherever you are, be there. Mm. So when you're at work, don't be thinking about the time you didn't spend with the kids last night playing with them. When you're at home with the kids, don't be thinking about the work that has to be done at the office.
Mm.
Fully and completely engaged and embraced in what you're doing. And yeah. So I don't look back and say, gee, I wish I'd have done that or I wish I'd have done that. I think people believe that sometimes when they've made decisions that they feel maybe uncomfortable with ethically, that maybe it was they should have done something a little more right than that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know what? I can't point to what other people. I think I would believe that I really missed the boat if I did something that didn't fit my values.
Sure.
So I've tried to live my life in my values. And if you live your life in your values, then you made the best decision that you could with the facts that you had, get over it and move on.
Yeah. I don't know if you realize this or not, but basically, in this short period of time, you've given me enough for my next book, man. There's so many, as my assistant Kelly is calling it, but there's so many Ivanisms like going around here, and you can't see the screen, so you can't see the yeah. chat row. But it's awesome, man. You know, the fire, the ice, the Ivan. I mean, it's just it's fun, man. Live your life and your values. Okay, couple quick questions, and then we'll let you jump here. But Scott's got a question.
Yeah.
Well, actually, a 2-part question, which is number one: as you look back on sort of that, again, that genesis period for B&I, did people tell you that it couldn't be done? And if so, what was your response?
Oh, yes, absolutely. You told me it couldn't be done. And here was the phrase that was used over and over and over again in 65 countries. We're different here.
Mm.
They said it everywhere. And the funny thing is, I started B&I in Arcadia, California, which is in L.A. County. The first time I heard, oh, no, Ivan, this won't work here, we're different, was in the San Fernando Valley just a few months later. Okay? And so the San Fernando Valley was saying, no, we're different. We're not like those people in the San Gabriel Valley that work there. And I learned pretty quickly that we're different is really code for I don't want to do it.
Mm.
And so people say, no, it won't work because we're different or whatever. And so, I learned how to address that pretty well with the "we're different" mentality before you even heard it. I learned how to, I addressed it by going into countries. We learned this in Australia, where we presented it and people are like, oh, this is an American concept. And we're not like those Yanks. So what we did was we changed all the manuals from American English to Queen's English, spelling changes. We made something like 400 changes, all spelling. That's it.
Adding the U and labor and that sort of thing. Yeah.
And good morning, everyone. It was good day, mates. You know, I mean, that's it.
Yeah.
So when we opened the next group in Australia, we came in, we showed them the manual. And we said, now, many of you may know that this program started in the U.S., but this is not an American program. This is an Australian program. We have made over 400 changes to this manual to make it Australian. What do you think? And they looked at it and they said, yeah, mate, this is good.
And just mostly spelling. Yeah. And another
all spelling and a couple of phrases. That's it. So we learned how to address the problem before it was brought up.
Mm.
That was our solution to that problem. And it happened consistently.
Yeah. Oh, that's funny. I really want to see the edition for the Valley, you know, like the Valley Girl edition for BNI. I want to see that one. And I know we kind of covered this, but another question for Bruno. What are you most excited about these days? I mean, I assume it's the speaking and the teaching and the media stuff. Anything else that's got you really excited?
That's what I'm excited about. You know, my title has changed from founder and chairman of founder and chief visionary officer. So, you know, I'm working with the company and trying to create the long-term vision of the organization. We want to substantially grow. We want to be more of a houseward name. You know, we want people to know BNI and have it be more recognizable globally. So that's my big goal, is to help build the brand even further.
Awesome. And so if somebody has potentially a business opportunity for you or for BNI, or if they want to get in contact with you or with the organization, what's the best thing for them to do?
Well, BNI.com is the best way to connect with the organization. I have a blog, IvanMeisner.com. So you can go to my blog at IvanMeisner.com. And
okay.
I read all of the posts that are up there. So I'm happy to connect with people there. And I usually put up a couple of blogs a day. I mean, a week, a couple of blogs a week.
Yeah. Awesome, man. All right. Well, look, we're going to let you go here. This has been an amazing special episode of Reinvention Radio with the one and only Dr. Ivan Meisner from BNI. And I got to tell you, man, the wisdom and your willingness to share and your candor is just absolutely amazing and really, really appreciated. And we know what we can do for you, man, now. So givers gain. So we will definitely keep that in mind, my friend.
Thank you. Can I leave you with one parting thought?
I wish you would.
You know, as I travel around the world, people ask me, what's the key to networking? Can you give me, you know, one thing, one nugget about the key to networking? And I tell them, you know that expression, it's not what you know, it's who you know?
Sure, sure.
It's not what you know or who you know. It's how well you know each other that counts.
Mm.
You want to build a powerful personal network. It's all about building relationships, deep professional relationships. That's the way you build a powerful personal network. It's not just who's in your contact list. It's whether you could pick up the phone, call them, and they'll answer your call and be willing to help you. That is a powerful personal network.
Yeah. All right, my man. And on that note, I think we can we'll call it a wrap here on Reinvention Radio. So thank you so much, my friend. And just keep up the amazing work. And I know that your work has impacted literally millions of lives, and not too many people can say that. So I'm honored and I'm humbled you chose to join us today. And knowing what you bill per hour, please don't send the bill.
No, I won't. Thank you so much.
All right, my friend. Take care.
Bye.
You just got dismantled. Thanks for listening to Reinvention Radio. For more information about the show and your host, Steve Olshan, visit reinventionradio.com.